The music of Henry Mancini might strike you as kind of middle of the road, so why is a group of adventurous jazz musicians reinterpreting it? My guest Matt Brudbeck is the leader of the band Orange Symphonette. Their debut album is devoted to the music of Mancini and features such well-known tunes as the Pink Panther theme, Moon River, Charade, and the Baby Elephant Walk. Brubeck has described their interpretations as uneasy listening. Brubeck is a cellist who's a member of the Berklee Symphony. He's arranged music for the Kronos Quartet and has composed for the Clubfoot Orchestra. He's also the son of Dave Brubeck, the celebrated jazz pianist and composer. Here's the Orange Symphonette's version of the Inspector Clouseau theme. Why Henry Mancini?
Aha. Well, first off, I think the most important thing to realize is I'd like to give credit where credit is due, is that as much as I would like to think this was entirely my idea, it is not. It was actually my wife's idea to do Mancini. And she actually said, you know, you really got to listen to this music. Someone needs to be doing this. And you know, way before Mancini actually died. And she really felt that it was really deserving of reinterpretation and suggested that, you know, she said, you know, you know a lot of great musicians. Why don't you put together a project to do this? And around the same time, what happened is that we actually had a gig lined up at an experimental musical space called Radio Valencia. And I assembled this group of players who I had met playing with Tom Waits, working on The Night on Earth and the Black Rider projects. And we went in there hardly knowing what we were doing, but the musical result was so great that we decided to stick with the project.
What do you like about Henry Mancini's music and what works for you in terms of improvising from it?
You know, I always think that if the melody is good, then, you know, the rest of it just kind of follows naturally. So first of all, you have these really strong melodies and good structures to work with. Secondly, Mancini was really fond of using very kind of oddball orchestration, which I'm really into, like using zithers and, like, you know, the calliope on the Baby Elephant. You know, the Baby Elephant Walk, and you know, tape echo delays, Chinese gongs, and he was the first guy to also kind of use sort of, you know, the cheesy rock or jazz combo as kind of a musical device, in, you know, in a Hollywood movie, and you know, I just love the sound.
Well, let me play something else from the new Henry Mancini record, and I thought we'd play Charade, the theme that he wrote for the movie Charade, which starred Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn. This is a lovely waltz, which you don't do as a waltz, nor do you do it as a lovely song. you arranged this track. Tell me about your arrangement.
Well, it was kind of my somewhat irreverent idea to. I just really thought that Charade worked better in four, even though it kind of.
In four quarter time,
rather, and even though it kind of required squeezing the music into 10-bar phrases when most music is in 8-bar phrases, it just worked really great. The thing that came to me is this sort of James Brown kind of guitar lick, and the melody just works so great over it. And then actually, in honor of the original, we do kind of slip into a waltz in the bridge, but we kind of really play it like, I don't know, a drunken cabaret band more than anything else.
Well, this is Orange Symphonette playing Henry Mancini's theme from Charade. And my guest is Matt Brubeck, the leader of the band and the cellist. the Orange Symphonette. My guest, Matt Brubeck, is the leader of the band and the cellist. I'm wondering if you have played a lot of more straight-ahead jazz, and if you still do much of that.
Yeah. I have other music projects that I'm involved with, which are more straight-ahead.
I guess here's what I'm wondering. Were there a lot of standards that you used to play that you just got really tired of, that got really worn out for you, and you wanted to find new, fresher material?
That is true. I don't think that I got as jaded and burnt out as some saxophonist who's played, you know, Girl from Ipanema on his 100th casual that year. And in fact, there's standards that I would like to explore more and delve into. So I really wasn't coming from that position so much as actually a lot of it was just that playing jazz that had this air of complete seriousness about it was so much work that I really felt, you know, why not have this project where the point of departure is just this music that is relatively, you know, easy to learn and is familiar material for a lot of people from the audience, but let's then take it to this place that's really far out. In other words, I've been involved with a lot of original music things in which the starting point was pretty obscure and then would like get even more obscure. And I thought, well, let's like have this stuff where the starting point is like, you know, the Pink Panther. It got, you know, almost every person in the world knows that tune. And then let's just take that, you know, fairly out.
Your father is the pianist and composer Dave Brubeck. And I'm wondering what your earliest musical memories are.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty easy, actually. Earliest musical memories are quartet rehearsals with Eugene Wright, Joe Morello, and Paul Desmond. And Eugene used to take the train up so he wouldn't bring his bass with him. So my dad had this kind of K rehearsal bass, which used to be under the piano. And he used to sit on top of it and just kind of pluck the notes during rehearsals. And I used to love being underneath the roar of the piano during rehearsals. So that's, you know, that is a very early musical memory. And also my dad practicing, you know, at night on a little spinet in the bedroom. And my room was right across the hall from my parents' bedroom and kind of hearing that, those muffled tones. And when I go home, you know, I'll still hear him practicing and it'll put me right back to that kind of childhood space. And it's like a very familiar, you know, scent at grandma's house or something.
And when you were a child, did your father's playing seem impressive or just a fact?
Oh, even as a child, I was always impressed with it musically. I think where it was just a fact was that I don't think I really recognize how much work he had done prior to my being born and, you know, all the time on the road and like the whole quartet, you know, driving across the country in like an old Bentley, you know, kind of stuff. What I was naive about is, you know, how much work went into the level of success. And, you know, you have to keep in mind that unlike my oldest brother, Darius, who is 14 years older than me, I was born really at the peak of my father's success. So it's like I just came into the world with, you know, Time magazine covers and all these awards and, you know, successful international touring and being this, you know, jazz U.S. goodwill ambassador. And I really wasn't that aware until I got older of, you know, just the endless nights playing, you know, in these dives and, you know, mafioso, you know, pointing guns at him and saying, you better play this or that. And, you know, just all this kind of, you know, musician's dues that he went through in the late 40s and 50s. Yeah.
So does it ever seem like you and your brother Darius were raised by different fathers? You were raised by a famous father and he was raised by a struggling artist?
Yeah, I think it is really, I think that it's interesting because in many ways Darius and I are very similar, but we have this very, I think we had very different growing up experiences. I mean, Darius was babysit by Lenny Bruce for a little while. Can you imagine a worse babysitter?
And, that's risky, isn't it?
That's risky, yeah. Well, yeah, because my friends, my parents were real good friends with Mort Saul, and Mort Saul, is, I guess, said, well, I've got this guy, Lenny, this is unemployed friend. But, you know, and then, you know, I grew up in this, like, beautiful house in the countryside in Connecticut, and, you know, my Darius grew up in, you know, this little ramshackled apartment on 18th and Castro in San Francisco. You know, very different experience.
My guest is Matt Brubeck, leader of the Orange Symphonette. Their debut album is devoted to the music of Henry Mancini. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with cellist Matt Brubeck, leader of the Orange Symphonette. Their debut CD features reinterpretations of music by Henry Mancini. Matt is the son of Dave Brubeck. How did you choose cello to be your instrument?
You know, I think I just like the sound of it. Well, it was interesting. I started as a pianist, and, you know, the typical school system things, oh, so you're a pianist, so it means you can read treble clef and bass clef. Well, we need some bass clef instruments for the school orchestra. And so, you know, I started out on this beat up, you know, with initials carved in it, you know, kind of cello. And, but I heard the Tokyo String Quartet play in a local concert went fairly early on, and I really loved the sound of the cello then. I think they were playing Bartok. And also, next-door neighbor who turned out later to be my cello teacher at Yale was Aldo Parisa, a wonderful Brazilian cellist and really fabulous teacher. And I think, you know, I heard some recitals, and my older brothers were friends of Aldo's kids. And so if I was tagging along with them, you know, literally, we'd walk through the woods between house and house, and I would hear Aldo practicing a lot. So I think that combination of factors and maybe sitting on that bass and plucking it. Subsequently, actually, I've learned to play bass with the Orange Symphonette. It's, you know, and I really would hesitate to say that I'm a bass player. But, you know, I'm foremost a cellist, and actually my second instrument I would say really would be piano, and thirdly, a bass player.
Has it been hard to find places to play cello?
Yeah, because it's mostly because it's a quiet instrument. I mean, that's really the struggle, because you have this kind of dilemma in which the more you amplify the cello, the less like a cello it sounds, you know, sort of no matter what you do. And, you know, and I've spent years fiddling around with electronics. I have a very good solid body electric cello, which, you know, people come up to me and say, God, that's the best sounding, you know, electric bowed string instrument I've ever heard. And, you know, I'm very satisfied with it in terms of like this band plays, can play fairly loud. And, you know, when I use that, but, you know, nothing replaces an acoustic. And so if I was in an ideal world, I would always play, you know, the acoustic cello if I could, just because I have this more immediate, I like the way the thing vibrates against your chest. You know, that's such a part of the cello experience. Yeah.
Did you ever study with your father?
You know, actually, that's a kind of interesting anecdote. This is something that actually all my older brothers and I, we had this experience where my dad would sneak out the back door, ring the front doorbell, and we had these appointed lesson times, and he'd be wearing like these Groucho Marx glasses with a little mustache and a funny hat and a beat up coat. And he was like, you know, Dr. Quackenbush or something like that. And he teaches piano lessons as another person.
Wow.
And so.
And he did that because?
I think he did that. I don't know. I think, maybe he'd been reading Benjamin Spock or something. You know, I'm not sure. I think that he realized that we all had natural curiosity to learn from him, but I think that he also thought that it would be a lot easier for us to just make it like a game, first of all, because it was game and pretend and kind of fun. And that I think, you know, I think he was beginning to sense the sort of, you know, burden of his success on us, and, you know, or he could foresee that happening. And I think he wanted to teach us, but he also wanted to just keep it kind of, you know, fun. And it seems to sort of vacate some of the psychological burden of the whole thing.
Well, let's close our interview with another track from the Orange Symphonette's Henry Mancini record. Why don't we hear Moon River? This is an interesting arrangement, which has two discrete parts. Why don't you talk about this a little bit?
I would say that a lot of people have commented, they really hear the Tom Waits influence in Moon River.
And a lot of the musicians in the band have played with Tom Waits.
Right. And it's because it has this ethereal floating kind of everyone's kind of reaching somewhere kind of feel to it. And then that's the first part. And the second – and it's also such a beautiful melody. It really deserves – it lays so great on the cello. It's really great. And then the second part of Moon River is a cha-cha. And a lot of people say, boy, that was like this really sick idea you guys had. And then I have to correct them and say, well, actually, if you watch Breakfast at Tiffany's, Moon River as a cha-cha is the background music for the really chaotic, out-of-control party scene at Holly Golightly's apartment. So we're just actually, just doing what Henry did with it, just taking it a little more chaotically.
Matt Brubeck, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.